You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. There was a time in this country when someone who needed medical care would take themselves to the doctor's office, or the doctor might make a house call. Care was provided, the doctor was paid, and everything that transpired was between patient and physician. No insurance companies, no co-pays, no filing claims. Well, some physicians are turning back the clock, so to speak, offering direct primary care, subscription-based. In Grand Rapids, Drs. Matt Falkowitz and Nicholas Blank are doing that through their Nova Direct Primary Care. So let's talk about direct primary care as we say hello to Dr. Matt Falkowitz. Welcome.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
So, Doctor, what are the basic differences between direct primary care and that traditional primary care that most people are used to?
Probably the biggest difference upfront is that we don't bill any insurance. One of the big hallmarks of direct primary care is a membership-based model. So you pay a set monthly fee, but then you kind of get essentially almost unlimited access to your primary care physician. So you can text us, call us, video chat, home visits, you know, in-office visits, all of that is included in that membership, and you don't have to pay a specific copay each time you see us.
And then if certain tests are ordered or x-rays or treatments, that would be something that you would pay for on top?
Yeah. So most direct primary care practices have other resources around their office that they can offer x-ray, they can offer lab work, those sort of things we get at decreased rates because people are paying cash for it. You know, going through insurance and those other sort of avenues, prices tend to get inflated. So just to give you an example, if you need to check what we call a basic metabolic profile, which checks things like sodium, potassium, your kidney function, those sort of things. If you go through a hospital system or an insurance-based system, that can easily cost you $40 to $100 on an outpatient basis, but through us, it's $2.50. So those excessive kind of costs are really what we're trying to avoid with direct primary care.
And just give us an idea what it costs for that monthly fee, that subscription.
So our subscription is, we do it age-based. So for the pediatric population or age 0 to 17, we do $29 a month. For 18 to 49, we do $59 a month. And then for 50 and over, we do $79 a month. If you sign up as a couple or as a family, we do end up offering a discount with that as well.
What made you and your partner, Dr. Blank, decide that direct primary care was the best way for you to serve patients?
How much time do we have? A few things. So Nick and I actually trained together in residency, and we initially started kind of wanting to do an insurance-based practice. And then once we kind of came across electronic health record that was built specifically for direct primary care practices, we kind of went down that avenue. But really the biggest difference we see is that we can spend more time with patients, and we are very patient-centered when it comes to our primary care, and we just want to sit down and get to know you. So when we were working in residency, and even after residency, working in a rural community in an insurance-based system, we're often running 20, 30 minutes behind. The biggest reason for that is we just want to sit and get to know you, get to know your story, and try to talk about all the different concerns that you may have. In insurance-based practice, it doesn't really work out very well because you only get, you know, 15 to 20 minutes per visit. Direct primary care, we're able to sit, spend an hour with you, get to know you a lot better, talk about all the concerns that you have, talk about all the things that we may want to address with you, and we have enough time to get those things done.
You know, as you mentioned, that timetable that a doctor in an insurance-based practice gets a certain set period of time to spend with the patient, and then you should move on. What does the public not understand, doctor, about what it's like to practice medicine in that kind of insurance-based model?
There's a lot of checkboxes that we have to click in each visit. There's a lot of studies out there as far as how much time doctors are spending really on the administrative tasks, pleasing insurance companies, those sort of metrics that we're doing that may not be related directly to patient care. And it's roughly about 2/3 of our time. So if you have a 20-minute time slot, that also accounts for the time that, you know, the nurse checks you in, they're doing all your vitals, they're taking your history, doing that sort of thing. By the time we get into the room, it may already be 7 to 10 minutes into your visit. So really at that point, we may only have 10 minutes to see you. You know, if you have two specific concerns on top of what you came in to be seen for, say high blood pressure, diabetes, something like that, it becomes very difficult to try to address each problem in a 2-minute time span. And then we're sitting here trying to fill out, you know, your history, trying to type in a physical exam, trying to come up with a plan and type everything in the computer. Oftentimes we're facing away from the patient. You feel like it's a very impersonal space when really it should be a very personal space, the relationship with you and your doctor.
What kind of patients does direct primary care work best for, and what does the model not work well for?
I talk with Nick about this all the time. There's probably four subsets of patients that work really well. in the direct primary care system, at least for our practice specifically. One is patients who are uninsured. That can be for any number of reasons, whether they're, you know, self-employed or they make a little too much for Medicaid but can't afford the marketplace. People who have cost-sharing ministries or health-sharing ministries. People who have high deductible plans, so the, you know, anything over $2,000. And then also people who aren't happy with their current healthcare experience, you know, or something new or something different, and we can offer you the access. If you are really happy with your current situation, you're happy with the doctor you have, you're happy with the insurance you have, there's probably going to be no reason for you to switch to us just because we're not going to be able to beat that. You know, there's not a huge population, I would say, that wouldn't fit well with the direct primary care system. But if you're happy with what you have, chances are we're not going to be able to make that any better.
Data showing that the number of DPC practices and doctors considering opening a DPC practice is going up. Do you think direct primary care could or should overtake insurance-based treatment?
So it is growing quite rapidly. So I would say, you know, a couple of years ago, there were maybe only 400 to 500 practices nationwide. And as of July 2019, there were over 1,200, with a rate of growing maybe 1 to 2 every week at this point. That's more of a symptom of the system. Doctors are getting, you know, burned out. There's a lot of moral injury happening within the system. So people are trying to get out and try to provide better care and have more control over their health care. Do I think direct primary care should take over the entire insurance system? I wouldn't phrase it like that, just because I think some sort of insurance is still necessary. As a DPC physician and being a family medicine doctor, I can't handle things that are emergencies like heart attacks. You know, I can't provide surgical services if you need your gallbladder or appendix out. So you're always going to need some sort of coverage, whether it's a catastrophic coverage, a high deductible plan, or a health sharing ministry, like I mentioned before. But I think from a primary care standpoint, you know, primary care is very well known to decrease costs in the health system overall. So the more primary care doctors we have out there that are able to spend more time with patients, do things very efficiently and effectively, I think we can decrease costs significantly and help the population in general.
How does direct primary care compare to clinics? For example, that you could do a walk-in and pay a small fee. People who don't have insurance may turn to that kind of maybe a walk-in clinic.
The biggest difference, I think, with direct primary care and kind of an urgent care or a med center or you know, a walk-in clinic would be really the relationship with your doctor. So if you go to an urgent care or walk-in clinic, you're going to be seeing someone different every time that has a very, very brief amount of time to try to get to know you, review your chart, and just see what the chief complaint is. You know, from a primary care office perspective versus an urgent care or walk-in clinic, you're much more likely to get something like an antibiotic for a common cold or something like that, rather than if you had a trusting physician relationship with a direct primary care practice. I think one of the biggest fears in the healthcare system is really cost. You know, so if you go into an urgent care clinic, you may pay a $75, $50 copay. You want something done at that visit, just because you don't want to have to pay to go back. In the direct primary care practice, you know, if you're paying the set monthly fee, you can see us as often as you need without fear of cost, without fear of paying another time for the second visit, even if it's only 3 to 4 days later. So that's really the biggest difference. You have that personal relationship and you know who you're going to talk to every single time.
Dr. Falkowitz, do you think concerns that DPC practices will create more healthcare inequality? Is there validity to that concern? You know, there are those who can afford it and those who can't.
So direct primary care, we try to do our best to keep the prices as affordable as possible. Now, if we think about, you know, $50 a month is half the cost of a phone bill, or, you know, if you get coffee every single day, if you cut your coffee so every other day at Starbucks or Big B, you can afford our membership. I don't think it necessarily will create inequality. I think moving forward, if we push direct primary care, you know, try to find, you know, innovative ways to get our name out there as far as, you know, other payers and things, maybe even considering paying for the membership just because we decrease costs overall. So from an inequality standpoint, you know, most of our patients are uninsured. Most of our patients, about 90% of our patients are either uninsured or have a high deductible health plan. So those are, you know, tend to be the population that we're looking at as far as being with the inequalities.
What do you think the answer is? I know you're in the Grand Rapids area. You know, you've got a city where nearly a quarter of the people there are under the poverty level. You know, as someone who provides that direct care, that primary care, what's the answer for those people?
You know, direct primary care, we try to look, you know, at our pricing and whatnot. So if someone is under the poverty level, if they're on Medicaid, you know, we may not be the best solution for them. If they're having concerns, if they can't get in to see a doctor, if they're in the urgent care or ER every other week, you know, it may be worthwhile from a time perspective for someone to pay for the membership. Now, there are certain patients that we do kind of what we call a DPC scholarship for. if they're going through a hard time, if they sign up and a couple months in they're saying, hey, I'm just having trouble, you know, affording the membership, it's not working out well for me, we can either try to work with them a little bit and try to increase the value of the membership or see what we can do moving forward. But, you know, DPC, essentially, we're healthcare. We're doing the best we can as from a healthcare perspective, but, you know, we are a business as well. So if we, you know, have free care for half of our patients, then the clinic will close. That's kind of just the reality of it, unfortunately.
What would it take to get you to willingly go back to an insurance-based practice?
Oh, goodness. Nova would just have to not work out at all. Currently, we're doing fine, trying to make things work. But it would be Nova would just absolutely have to be just completely blown up.
I gotcha. Dr. Matt Falkowitz, who's co-owner of the Direct Primary Care Office, Nova Direct Care in Grand Rapids. Doctor, thank you so much for being with us on Stateside.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
We turn now to Mary Ann Udall Phillips, who's director of the Center for Healthcare Research and Transformation at the University of Michigan Health System. Mary Ann, just how prevalent is this direct primary concept in Michigan?
Well, it's pretty small in Michigan. It's pretty small in the country. There's a service that actually keeps count of how many physicians participate in direct primary care. And nationwide, just a little more than 1,000 physicians say that they are direct primary care. Very, very small.
Would we say, what's the trend? Is it flat? Is it growing?
It's growing a little bit. Mm-hmm. We did a survey at our center that looked at how many physicians in Michigan say they are participating in direct primary care. And about 4% of primary care physicians say they are. But about 20%, a little more than 20% said they're thinking about it, they're interested in it. So I think it's a trend primary care physicians are watching.
So thinking of the traditional insurance-based medical practice that people are very familiar with, how much of a viable alternative is DPC?
Right. So people need to know that this is not insurance, right? This is a direct payment. That's kind of the word, direct primary care, a direct payment between a consumer and a primary care physician. And in return, that primary care physician doesn't bill insurance for most services and basically says they will take care of the patient. They'll be available, you know, in some cases, 24 hours. They have smaller practices, so they do things directly with the patient.
Spending more time with the patient is one of the things we heard from Dr. Matt Falkowitz that he liked, that he wasn't on that tight timetable that they are under, in his view, when they're in the insurance model.
Yeah, so physicians who are doing direct primary care have much smaller caseloads, and they are not doing every 15 minutes a new patient. That's their focus.
So when you say it's not insurance, then what are the pitfalls for consumers there?
Well, there isn't consumer protection, and so people need to know that the insurance, the rules that govern insurance don't apply to these relationships. They're, you know, again, they're sort of direct between the patient and the physician. And the patient usually will still have to buy insurance because this only covers a limited set of primary care services, right? So, you know, if you need surgery or you need most medications, you would still need to either pay for that out of pocket or pay for insurance. So insurance would be on top of the kinds of services provided by your primary care physician.
So that's what you see as some of the drawbacks.
Yes.
What do you think are some of the pluses?
Well, the pluses are that you're not being rushed in and rushed out. Depending on the model, there are some models where you can get, you know, more enhanced services, executive physicals and things like that, depending on what you're paying for that. Sometimes physicians will say they're available to you 24 hours a day, so you have more access, you can get in immediately, so it's more accessible to the patient.
So who do you think this is not suited for? Who is DPC not suited for?
Well, certainly you have to have money in order to be able to do this. You know, they generally charge at least $50 a month for these kinds of services, and sometimes they're up to $200 or more, depending on the nature of the services. So people who don't have a lot of extra disposable income are not likely to be able to afford these kinds of services.
As you say that there are doctors in the survey who are thinking of this, who are
yes.
open to this idea, what does this interest and this kind of uptick in DPC practices say to you?
Well, it says to me that many primary care physicians feel frustrated with the current structure that they're living under, that they feel pressed to see a lot of patients in a short period of time, that they don't feel like they can build those personal relationships that you might think back to the old days when primary care was seen as a very personal relationship. And so I think they like the concept. I do think they worry about, many of them worry about the income inequality disparities that it might reinforce because, again, people are paying for this out of pocket. And I think there are many physicians who have concerns about that idea. But I think they'd like to get back to a day when they had a real relationship with patients.
And that concern you talk about, we hear that concierge care, boutique medicine, those terms are used. Is there a work through around that, do you think?
For people in poverty or people who are very low income, is there a way to address this? There have been proposals. You know, the state of Michigan passed in 2015 a piece of legislation to test this idea within Medicaid that was designed to try to do something for people who are lower income. That pilot really hasn't gone anywhere because it's, again, it's more expensive for the state. It makes it very difficult. You know, we're balancing the cost of healthcare and trying to keep healthcare affordable with the desires to have more broader access to care. So it's a challenge. I haven't seen a very good workable model on that yet.
So what should patients consider when they are looking at the landscape and deciding which model of healthcare delivery is best for them?
Right. So, they really should consider what are their needs. You know, do they really need 24-hour access to a primary care physician? Is that something that's meaningful to them? If you're generally healthy, maybe you don't need a model that's like this. If you really do want that immediate access and, your time is limited and you have disposable income and you have a relationship with a physician who is in a model like this, that might be something for you to consider. But you've got to balance it with all the other needs you have as a family, as an individual. Again, you're going to have to buy insurance in addition to this, and you're going to have to think about the fact that you're going to have, in some cases, double coverage, and this direct primary care won't have those consumer protections in it.
So where do you see, if you look out into the kind of the landscape of the future with healthcare delivery, where do you see direct primary care fitting in?
Oh, it's a really interesting question. I think the whole question is a broader question. Where do we see primary care fitting in? One thing that we know in the U.S. versus other countries, we pay less for primary care, and we have fewer primary care physicians, and the demands on primary care are going up. As medicine gets more complex, as primary care physicians need to know more. And so I think we have to really be thinking about how do we support primary care physicians going forward. Direct primary care is one model. Some ideas around that have been surfaced, but there are other models that are being tested right now. So we have what's known as patient-centered medical homes that are where actually health plans, insurers give more money to primary care physicians to really do coordination of care. And I think those models have a lot of promise for the future. Accountable care organizations often put primary care physicians in a more central role and provide them with incentives and bonuses if they take on some extra responsibilities. So I think the whole question is, how do we better support primary care so we have viable numbers of primary care physicians for the future?
Marianne Udall-Phillips directs the Center for Healthcare Research and Transformation at the University of Michigan Health System. It is always great talking with you. Thank you.
And you too, Cindy. All right. Take care.